And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, Luminara and Anakin act as decoys to divert new enemy super tanks, while Padawan Bera Sophie and Ahsoka Tano try to destroy a separatist droid factory. There will be parades, but not the fun ones. Super tanks and two brave young women laying their lives on the line. We're talking about Weapons Factory this week. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing good.
That's good. You just missed us having a very fun chat about Pokemon Go.
Yeah, and it, as we're speaking, Pokemon Go is only a few days old, and it's already starting to change the world. So by the time this airs, I'm very curious to see like how if it's cooled down or if it's just the craziness has just begun.
Or it could be something along the lines of you're just trying to... I just see like... You know, riots breaking out, like, at a Trump rally, and everyone's just like, oh my god, there's a Pikachu over there! And everyone's like, forget this!
We thought they were counter-protesters. They were just coming in here for a rare Pokemon.
And they're like, bye! Bye, you guys! And, yeah, so, that was fun. Yeah, we had a nice little chat about Pokemon Go. And we came up with a plan, and we might try it out, so.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, should we share our evil Pokemon Go plan?
No, not yet. We'll see if they've figured it out by this time.
Yeah, because the plan is, but without giving away the plan is, we live in two different states. So we're thinking about a way to catch Pokemon from two different states and help each other. So
they could see. They might be able to figure out the plan from that.
Yeah, so we'll go from there.
Yeah.
Anyway, I only had one bit of news that I wanted to talk about, and it was tonight in news that Hope thought was really cool. You know how we always talk about the Tartakovsky cartoons for Clone Wars?
Oh, yeah.
My buddy is over at Graphic Policy, which is a great comic book news source, and they do amazing reviews. I love Graphic Policy. Love those guys over there. They're just great. They reported that Tartakovsky is going to be writing and drawing a Luke Cage comic coming this fall.
Oh, it's a comic.
Yeah.
I saw something about that, but I just assumed it was going to be a cartoon, which I was like, ooh, I'm down with that, but I'm down with the comic, too.
I'm pretty sure it's a comic. Let me click on this. I'm just, just get it. Oh, okay. Apparently it's not going to let me click on it. But I put a link in the show notes, and it is a drumroll while it loads. Oh, it loaded on my comment. Anyway, no, it's a comic. It's a comic book.
It'll look really cool. And
I know.
Very bottom layer, it should look really cool. But he's a good writer, too, so it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's
very action-packed, I bet.
Yep, it's called Cage. It's a mini-series that's going to be 4 issues, and it's going to be coming out this October. Welcome to the mean streets of New York City. Shoes are big, bottoms are belled, and the crime is rampant. But in the heart of the city, the world's hardest at working, smack-talking, chain-wrestling, tiara-sporting superhero is hitting the streets hard and hitting the bad guys harder. This hero for hire is on the case, and his rates are reasonable. He's Luke Cage, and he'll save your behind. Dig it.
I never really thought of that as a tiara on top of his head, but I guess it is.
Yeah. So, and it looks great. It looks just like the Clone Wars cartoons. I just thought that was because we're always talking about the Tartakovsky, I can't see his name, Tartakovsky cartoons. I thought that would be a cool little bit of information.
And he did Samurai Jack, which is...
And Powerpuff Girls.
Mm-hmm.
And Dexter's Laboratory. He pretty much did my entire childhood. Yay, childhood. I love the 90s. I'm a youngin'.
Better than a Gungan.
Remind me to send you something.
Okay.
My friend Billy and I was watching a series of videos where this guy was reviewing every Star Wars video game from the 70s to now, but he was only doing the bad ones.
Star Trek games, you say?
Star Wars games.
Oh, Star Wars games. There's a good amount of bad Star Wars games.
Yeah, it was called Starcades, and it was the YouTube user JonTron. The only one I didn't watch was the holiday special one, because, of course, I'm not allowed to watch the holiday special until December, so it was the only one I didn't watch. But he did 9 episodes, and he did all the ones like the Phantom Menace games. He did Nintendo Star Wars Chess, but pretty much all the Star Wars Atari games.
Did he do Flight of the Falcon? Do you remember that one?
I don't remember it, but it's really Nintendo great quality. What?
It was a Game Boy Advance game. It was terrible. I remember I bought it when I got my first Game Boy Advance. I was like, yeah, it's a Star Wars game where you're the Millennium Falcon. I was like, oh.
Yeah, but when I was watching it, I was thinking of you, and I was like, oh my god, Chris is going to totally dig this, because he was doing like all the 70s and 80s and 90s games.
There's quite a few bad Star Wars games. The ones that are good are very, 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 very good. And usually there's no in between. There's a couple that I would sort of consider in between, like decent, pretty fun games, but kind of cheesy, but they're still kind of fun in their own way. And then that's like a handful, maybe like 3 or 4. And then after that, it's abysmal.
Yeah. So I mentioned that to you earlier this week, and so if you want to, check out JonTron's Starcades, because they're absolutely wonderful, and I need to remember to put that in the show notes, too. Yeah. Weapons Factory, ready?
I'm ready.
Alrighty, so strapping listeners, I'm about to read about a page worth of things. Okay, let's get some coffee. I'm going to need that. Coffee, okay, so... Weapons Factory is the 28th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars, and it aired on November 13th, 2009. It was written by Brian Larson and Drew Z. Greenberg, and directed by Juan Carlo Volpe. It is the third part of the 5-episode arc of the Second Battle of Geonosis. Some extra episode information. So, I really enjoy watching the episode featurettes on StarWars.com, because we get Dave Filoni's insight on characters, scenes, settings, and the creative process. Most of the time, they're, like, super in-depth. And so when I went to go sit down and watch this one, I was expecting Dave to talk about the introduction of Bear Sophie and her working with Ahsoka. Instead, we got him talking about the silliest thing ever. This is my new favorite featurette. In the extra episode featurette, Dave Filoni says, "I've always wanted to do a scene at the Jedi Temple where the kids practice cutting shapes. A circle would be the easiest, but Barriss cuts a square. Maybe it's because she's a bit of a square compared to Ahsoka.
Oh.
There must be a scene where Yoda's teaching these kids and they have target shapes that they're supposed to cut. And some of the kids are cutting circles, but they're more like ovals. And Yoda is like, no, that's not a good circle. And some of the kids are cutting squares and they end up like a rhombus. And Yoda's like, no, that's a bad shape. Do they get judged on that kind of thing? Is that part of their Jedi training? I mean, Barriss cuts a nice rectangle. It has, like, 90-degree corners. Back in Duel of the Droids, Ahsoka cuts through a grate, and it's, like, a perfect circle. I mean, the muscle control. Have you ever tried to draw a perfect circle? It's almost impossible. So why not cut a square? It creates extra space. It makes it easier to walk through. So maybe Barriss is, like, a shape revolutionist.
Well, a square might be when you have more time to do it. Well, a circle is when you're trying to get in there fast and dirty, because there's less of a less. This is where geometry comes back into play, you know. So there's less circle, takes less time to make a square. It's longer.
I was just dying just listening to Dave talk about this. Have you ever seen
that's
the movie?
The guy I want in control of Star Wars, that he's thinking in those directions, you know.
I know
about it that much.
Have you ever seen the movie Big Hero 6?
No, I haven't. It's on my list of shame.
There's a scene where one of the heroes named Wasabi, he has like this like laser blade, and they're trying to cut through a wall, and he starts cutting the circle, and then it doesn't connect. So he starts backing it up, and then it starts he tries to cut it over to the edge, to the beginning part, and he backs it up, and he starts trying to cut it through again, and he starts making a spiral, and finally he just flashes through the wall, and he's just like, we did it! That's what it reminded me of when I was listening to this featurette. Alright, I have more. Oh god. Why did I write this much? I just really like Bear Sophie. She's one of my favorites. Okay, more extra information about this episode. The Wikipedia said that Barriss prefers studying the ancient Jedi texts and is a bit older than most Padawans, and it made me wonder whether or not she's older than Ahsoka in this episode. What do you think?
She seems maybe a little older. It's hard to tell.
I was thinking like 16, 17 most.
Yeah, yeah. Just, you know, I mean, actually, I mean, at that age, a year or two means a big difference to them. But, you know, like to me, it's like, yeah, they seem more or less the same age, but she had more the composure of someone who had a year or two on Ahsoka.
Yeah. All right. And Barriss's first appearance was Episode 2, Attack of the Clones, where she sat in with a meeting between Palpatine Yoda, Wet Blanket Windu, Mundi, and Luminara. Barriss is also a survivor of the First Battle of Geonosis. Barriss Sophia is actually first introduced in the novel The Approaching Storm, which was written by Alan Dean Foster, making Sophia an example of a character that was introduced within the Expanded Universe source, who later became part of the Star Wars canon. Sophia was also featured widely in a number of other Expanded Universe products, in which she eventually advanced to the rank of Jedi Knight and was noted to be a healer. But these have been rebranded as Star Wars Legends, and the details within them cannot be considered canon anymore. Sophia was originally was supposed to die in Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, as part of Order 66, but this scene was cut along with the deaths of Luminara and Shaak Ti. Unused footage from Attack of the Clones was going to be used for this appearance. Done! Oh! Ha! So much. Your turn. Here's Yoda. Sorry.
No, it's not. It's a short one, too.
I know.
But Yoda's short one, too.
You're a grower, not a shower.
Said too much. I have.
Okay.
Your turn to talk. I'm tired.
No gift.
I need a nap after that.
No gift is more precious than trust. In bed.
You gotta use trust in bed. There's like safe words and all sorts of things.
Yeah, yeah, and it's weird that it would be a trope. Well, we're altering it too, but yeah. And also, this... Well, I guess there is a theme of trust in this episode too, so this
it's
is what
would actually trust.
Yeah.
I wrote the word trust like all through Act 1 and in the final act.
I think they probably said trust probably about a half a dozen times at least also in the show.
Yeah, they were just like, you don't trust me, I do trust you, you don't trust me, I do trust Snips.
Trust me. Yep.
It was the return of the Snips. Return of the Snips? Oh shit, I gotta read more, don't I?
Yeah, you're not. No rest for the wicked today.
I know, right?
No rest for the wicked cool. Yeah. Dude,
this is what I do to myself. I'm just like, look at all these amazing notes. Like, you were finding out all the stuff about Barriss. It's going to be great. And I'm doing this in such detail. And then I was just like, oh, fuck, I got to read all this shit. That's okay. It helps. I have anxiety about reading out loud, so this helps. So
hey, we've been getting a lot of downloads, so at least you know you're not, at least you know that no, it's not that, like, nobody's listening.
I know. I was doing our notes today. I think our tracking our download numbers, all the episodes that we mentioned in the season one roundup has all had upticks in downloads.
Oh, excellent. So it's real people listening.
Yeah, because like, for example, Ambush last month didn't have any downloads, and the month before it only had a few, and this month it's already one of our highest downloaded episodes of this month.
Good. I hope that means there's an uptick in people watching Clone Wars. Yay, yay. I was afraid that it was like some just like, you know, Soviet bot, you know, looking for somebody's bank account number or something. But no, it sounds like it's real people with real brains.
Yeah, and listeners, we want to hear from you, and you'll hear more about that at the end of the show. So, Act 1?
Act 1.
All right. The Second Battle of Geonosis. Shut up, Chris.
Better take a deep breath.
Yeah, all right. The second battle of Geonosis continues. Our heroes hear that enemy leader Poggle the Lesser is held up in his almost complete droid factory. They need to destroy this factory at all costs before it's completed. The Republic sends Jedi Master Luminara and her Padawan Barriss Offee to help out Anakin and Ahsoka. Ahsoka is briefing the troops, or she would be if Anakin didn't keep butting in and taking over. They dismiss the clones, and Ahsoka irritatingly says that Anakin doesn't trust her. Anakin just wants the job done right, but she takes this as lack of a trust issue. And Luminara and Barriss arrive with the men and find Ahsoka and Anakin still quarreling. Luminara warns her Padawan that Team Argue tends to play fast and loose with regulations and commands. Barriss bows to Ahsoka in their introductions, and Anakin just smiles at Ahsoka. Pleasantries done, they have a factory destroyed. The Jedi look over the map of the factory and plan. The frontal assault will have high losses, but Luminara shows that there's a labyrinth of maze-like tunnels under the factory. They send someone up into the tunnels, up into the factory, and blow up the reactor. Anakin points out it's a great way to get lost, but Barriss has memorized all the turns and paths to the reactor. Luminara and Anakin will be the diversion while the factory's destructions will fall to the Padawans. Whoa, 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 whoa. Whoa, I did not okay this plan, Anakin barks, because if it's not his plan, then apparently it's not good. Ahsoka is like, dude, come on. We've totally snuck past enemy forces once under a cardboard box. I fought off a waffle virus and Cad Bane, and they were both blue. You don't know this yet, but in like 20 years, I'm gonna fight in a rebel cell, and I'm gonna own your ass on Malachor. I got this. They decide that Barriss will lead the Padawan mission, and the ladies will run off. Luminara asks Anakin why he feels Ahsoka isn't up to the task. He never said that, and goes to ready his men for the coming fight. They're going to have to march their troops parade style in the middle to get Poggle's attention.
Yeah, well, thanks for working Blue Waffle in there.
I did, and Star Wars Rebels.
Yes. Very nice, very nice.
I still love the fact that they got past enemy lines under a freaking cardboard box.
Sure, why not?
That is still amazing.
It would have even been better if it said fragile on the side or something like that. Do not bend.
And the droids were like, oh, don't do it. Don't bend the box. There's something fragile in there.
Better not bend that box.
Move the tank around it. That was the other thing. I was like, what if a tank hits their box? It's not like it's a protected box.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't be pretty.
So, what did you think of Act 1, Chris?
It was okay.
It's a lot of setup.
Their argument is a little on the nose and awkward at the beginning of like, okay, I see what's going to happen here, you know, and right in the beginning, you know, as soon as they're done with the argument, they, you know, they follow right up on it and it's like, okay, here comes the trust issues. So I thought that was a little bit heavy handed, you know, and, I don't know. The way their argument was written was a little bit just like awkward coming out of their mouths. You know, it was a little too the way that he just sort of stepped it, like just obviously stepped in, you know, walked over her presentation and then they had an argument. Yeah, it was a little. But yeah, my biggest note is I love that clone. That, you know, how they have like writing on the, you know, little decorations on their armor. He had stitches across his face. You only see him for a couple seconds. He goes running past. I love that clone. That's great. Stitches.
What's his name? Name him now.
I have no idea.
No, you name him.
Oh, Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Frankie.
Franken clone.
Yes.
Okay, we love you, Franken clone. You will live on forever Jedi's history.
Very punk rock.
You know, I had something about the fight because, you know, it is kind of heavy-handed and it kind of seems just, it's like Anakin being Anakin, you know, but there's a moment where the clones actually turn and like smirk at each other.
Yeah.
And like when it happened and I was like, well, maybe Anakin was doing it on purpose, like a teaching moment, like a hazing moment, trying to see if Ahsoka would keep her cool in front of the men. And so it seemed like the clones were in on it too in that moment. So I'm wondering if it was done in a way to be like a hazing moment for Ahsoka.
It might have been. The clones might have been just like, oh, here these two go again. You know,
yeah.
These guys are infamous for scrapping.
for snipping.
Oh, it wasn't. It was. I didn't think it was terrible. It was just. It was just. For the most part on this show, they really have a good feel for the characters' dialogue. You know.
Yeah.
And it just feels like natural dialogue. This was a little bit exposition like. You know, they were on the nose. You know, she was laying her complaints out too plainly. They could have done it with more subtle interplay, I guess. It's a kid's cartoon, too, but they are going for PG-13, so...
Yeah. Especially at this point in the show. And, like, I know they were doing it to show the difference between Barriss and Ahsoka, because Barriss gets there and, like, freaking bows to Ahsoka, and she was just like, oh, God.
Yeah.
What is happening? Why are you bowing to me? But I do like the fact that Ahsoka, like, right away, I was just like, here's my hand. Put it there. We're equals.
Yeah. Well, you know, I wonder if that was, like, a Jedi greeting, some sort of Jedi protocol, or if she's going by the protocol of, like, her people or something, you know?
Yeah, because I don't recall ever seeing it. Like, maybe, right. Like, bowing to, like, higher members of the council, but even then it's usually, like, a head nod, not, like, a full-out bow.
Because I don't think Jedi, like, really, like, as much forego, like, who they are to become Jedi. It's not... It's as anything like that. It's a little culty. It's a little bit like a cult, but I don't think that they have to deny their. Well, we've seen in Clone Wars, there's been a lot of them speak freely of their races and their traditions of their homeworld and stuff. So maybe that was just her traditional greeting from whatever her home planet is or something.
Yeah.
But I thought that was a neat little scene. Neat little dynamic being introduced.
I have always liked Barriss and Luminara's designs because, like, you know, I've always, you know, Star Wars, God, I love it, but it has so many just, like, white guys saving the galaxy. So I always saw, and this is going to sound so terribly racist, I'm so sorry now. I always saw, like, a lot of the other alien races as being our other races in our world. And so, like, I always like Barriss and Luminara's designs because they always remind me of, like, Middle Eastern, like, wearing, like, hijabs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so I've always loved their designs that they always remind me of, like, Middle Eastern women. And
like Middle fighting. Eastern and a little Indian, too. Like,
like, fighting in, almost if it was someone from, say, like, Iran or something fighting as Jedi. And I really, like, loved their design because, like, badass women in hijabs fighting in with lightsabers. I love it. And I've seen cosplayers, like, Muslim cosplayers dressed up like Luminara, and they're amazing. amazing.
There's a little bit of gypsy to it, too, with the colors and the dangly stuff here and there.
So I did see a beautiful picture that someone did of Luminara without her headdress, and she had just, like, this gorgeous, like, natural hair that was, like, poofy and beautiful, and I was just like, yes! Oh, it was so gorgeous.
She has naturally curly hair.
It was gorgeous. So my other two notes were, I love the opening, the visual in the opening minute of them, when Luminara ships are coming in, they're just flying over bodies of dead clones everywhere.
Well, this is also like following the big, like, Black Hawk Down World War II type. This is a huge arc. It's like five episode arc.
Yeah, it started with Synth Spy when they found out about it. So, and it, we still have two more episodes after this.
Yeah, and it's like, so you really see the in-depth, you know. I mean, the main storyline is passing by stuff like Fields of Dead Clones and stuff like that. But you have five episodes of that. Like, so this is probably the most in-depth we've ever seen, like, a battle covered in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Goes on in one.
The only other ones I can think of that were more in-depth than this is starting in season four, we start getting 3 to 4 episode arcs. So there's the Water War arc that I absolutely despise because, my God, it's boring, where they're fighting on the world of the Mon Calamari, and there's, like, the Mon Calamari Prince, and Kit Fisto's there, and Padme's there, and they're all fighting underwater. But that was, like, 3 or 4 episodes. And then Umbara is coming to mind with General Krell, and that was 4 episodes.
Five episodes is, like, almost a 2-hour movie, you know?
Yeah, 5 episodes.
It's like a full-length Star Wars movie
It's one episode short. No, it's a fifth of the season, almost, because there's, like, 22 episodes in the season, so it's... No, it's a fourth of this... It's a fourth of the
season. It's a good chunk of the season.
I don't know how to math. I was an English major. Actually, I was a theater major, but close enough. Fuck math. But yeah, it's a fourth of the season. This is an in-depth arc, and I love it this early on. Because I think the next closest before this really was The Malevolence, but even then it was three very separate episodes.
They were almost standalone. They only had the same sort of theme. And this one, these ones are kind of have enclosed standalone stories to them too, but they are a lot more intimately tied together, you know, in the storyline.
I'm going to ask you a question that we asked in our season one roundup.
Okay.
So now that we're in this arc where it is an ongoing arc, do you prefer this, where this arc is building with every episode, or do you prefer the standalone episodes?
I always prefer the standalone episodes, but I still really like the arcs. But it's such a fine difference. And I like that the arcs are still somewhat standalone, too. So if you scrambled up the season into random, you know, number distribution, you could still watch it.
Yeah.
But, I do really like the aspect of you get to see all the aspects, you know, of what they had to do and the tactics that they used to do it in the Battle of Geonosis. And it's not just a battle where, you know, they go in and they take over the planet. It's a series of battles and things that they have to do and people that they have to chase and all that. And they have time to fully explore it amongst the five while doing the storylines. The main, you know, adventure of, like, okay, we have to get from here to here in these 22 minutes.
Yeah,
and it takes a place we've already established from the movies, so you get to learn more about it, you know. We get to learn a lot about it, actually. Especially in the next episode, too.
I definitely like the standalone episodes myself, but I like it like this as well, because unlike later in the season where it's like Tekumbara, it's just a continuation of one battle. But this, we get to see all different sides of the battle. We got to see Obi-Wan's part. We're going to see Obi-Wan again after he heals. So we're seeing Anakin's part. We're seeing Mundi's part. So we're seeing, like, different sides of this battle. Unlike Umbara, where we're with, like, Rex and Fives and Jesse and Tup and Kix for, like, 4 episodes straight. It's not like we're seeing... Because we know that Obi-Wan's fighting on Umbara, but we never see Obi-Wan in the arc. We just know that he's elsewhere on the planet. Unlike this, we're seeing different sides of the battle from different points of view. So I kind of like them. I like it in this format too.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I do too. If it was cut together as a movie though, it might not work because it would be a very disjointed movie. Like,
see the Clone Wars movie for the best example.
Right. Well, this one would be, yeah, you know what? But this one would be a lot more action. This one would be a lot faster paced and more action packed than the Clone Wars movie. I don't think this would have made a good, but you know, we're in season 2, so this would not have made a good opener for it, but it would have made a better movie all cut together. It still would have been like a little bit, especially like without saying much about the next episode. The next episode is like a lot different than the other 4 episodes.
Yeah. And same thing with the final one of the Geonosis arc. It's very different from all these as well. So, alright, and then my only other note is, I like that it's a well-known fact with the Jedi that Anakin and Ahsoka are like, screw the rules, because Luminara actually warns Barriss. Though, I made me wonder, like, Barriss has been around since episode 2, shouldn't she know that about Anakin by now?
Yeah, well, you know, maybe she's just giving her a little reminder just in case she forgot or whatever.
Yeah. But,
and you know, you don't have to give the viewers that reminder about Anakin and Ahsoka, but it still helps. You know, I mean, yeah. I was thinking there's, you know, a lot of kids who maybe hadn't even watched the movies at this point.
Or people like me, like, I haven't seen the movies since I was, like, 10.
Right, so right.
Who aren't, like, yeah.
Who aren't going to be like, oh, yeah, these guys have met and know all about each other, you know. So they're introducing them a little bit because they're introducing the character.
Because, like, for me, I was like, I totally forgot Barriss was in the movies at all until I was playing the Star Wars Card Trader app. And I got the Barriss of Free card. I was like, cool, a Clone Wars card. I was like, whoa, it's a real person. Wait, what? And then when I was writing the notes, I was like, okay, so I know she's been in the movies at some point. So I was going through her history on Wikipedia, and I was like, oh, she was in episode 2. Okay. So, yeah.
But just sort of there. She wasn't doing any, you know, plot stuff.
Yeah.
In it, so.
Well, did you have anything else for Act 1?
No, I'm ready to go right into the action.
All right, so Act 2. Poggle and his tactical droid called TX-21, or we'll call him Texas Junior, discuss that the factory is running at 50%. They have these shiny new super tanks. I just knocked my glasses off my face. They have these shiny new super tanks that are almost ready, and their public has nothing that can stand up to them. Anakin and Luminara march their troops towards the factory as droids spill out towards them. The Padawans race down the side of a cliff to get under the factory. The battle erupts as the Jedi's masters take out the first wave, but they fall into a trap. Geonosians attack from behind. The Padawans race across to the other side and they cut their way into the catacombs of the factory. Barriss and Ahsoka sneak through the catacombs, dodging guards and sleeping Geonosians. Ahsoka wants to find another way, but Barriss needs her to trust in Barriss' abilities to get them through. A Geonosian wakes up as they pass and he starts to follow them. The ladies find the control room and place their bombs. But their following Geonosian informs Poggle of the ladies. Poggle and Texas Jr. greet Barriss and Ahsoka in the control room with a tank of their own. Outside, the losses are heavy as Anakin and Luminara's men are dying. The roller death ball droids spin out and Rex calls out the heavy artillery with rocket launchers. Inside, Texas Jr. orders the super tanks to roll out. Rex orders their own tanks to fire at the super tanks, but they don't even scratch them. I just realized I put those in the wrong order. Anakin and Luminara get the green light that the Padawan's bombs are active. As the super tanks fire on them, our heroes lose their own tanks. Back inside, the Geonosian guards collect the bombs as the Padawans fight off the tanks. Ahsoka throws a bomb at the tank, but it doesn't even dent it. It does explode Texas Jr., though. Rest in peace, Texas Jr. Outside, our heroes are being decimated under the fire of the super tanks. Anakin wants Rex to clear out his men. He has a plan to lure the tanks out onto the rock bridge. Him and Luminara each take a bag of explosives and head out. Barriss and Ahsoka aren't faring too great. The Geonosians got their bombs. There's a super tank. Ahsoka gets knocked out. They're not having a good day. Anakin and Luminara climb under the bridge and place bombs along the bottom while dangling over a cliff. No big deal. They backflip and explode the bridge. The super tanks fall into a fiery pit. But Anakin is now worried about Ahsoka. The bombs will go off any minute. Rex says that the evacuation ships will arrive at any moment and he suggests that Anakin will be on one. Not without Ahsoka, he snaps. Luminara reassures that Barriss will not fail. Barriss and Ahsoka hop into the tank and take out the droids. Barriss doesn't know what to do with the plan without the bombs. Ahsoka grimly realizes that they will have to use the tanks to destroy the reactor. They must make the sacrifice to save everyone else. Together, Ahsoka and Barriss call in to say goodbye to their masters and press the button. The Jedi Masters and Rex watch in horror as the factory comes down. Ugh. God.
Yeah, they practically gave them a movie death, you know, the, like, montage of the sad music and everything, and the it's funny, the reactor looks like the reactor in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, since both of those characters could have, at least Ahsoka could have been viably killed, you know, when you're watching it, well, now, you know, I know better. But, like, watching that for the first time, you could be like, ooh, are they really doing this, you know? And the way they've done this series so far, yeah, they just might have done that, you know?
Yeah, like, definitely. God, Kevin Kiner's music was so good in that scene, too.
It's the classic montage, just like, no music, you know, the sad yet triumphant because, you know, the enemy is being defeated, but at what cost?
Yeah.
Whoa, somebody's going by with a Harley.
I hear it. Vroom, vroom.
And, geez, the super tanks sound more badass than they look. They're pretty badass, like, they're effective weapons, but they're kind of boxy. But I was just like, yes, super tanks. Bring out the super tanks.
I liked, I definitely liked how they were, I had, like, the, like, I always explain how, like, fireworks, but the fa-fa-fa-fa, like, shooting out, like a little bit at a time, not, like, one big bomb. It's just, like, fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa.
Yeah, like a...
Carpet bombs.
Yeah.
That's the word I'm looking for. That's what fa-fa-fa-fa means. It means carpet bombing. So what did you think of Act 2?
I love that they don't even use subtitles for the Geonosians, who are also one of my favorite, like, Star Wars sound design language. Like, it has that click of that click speaking, like a lot of the like, is it like New Guinea tribes?
You know? I don't know. I went to school with a girl from high school. I went to school with a girl from high school from South Africa, and you would hear her whenever she talked on the phone with her mom. She would use a lot of clicks in her language, so she'd be like click 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 going to the mall. It was always so interesting to listen to her talk on the phone with her mom, because she would throw in like English words as she spoke. It was so interesting. I loved whenever she had to call her mom, because I would just listen and be like, yes.
See, it's sort of like that. Like, it's the clicks, and the rest of it is not like that. Like, the real, like, it's some sort of like weird, like, you know, like almost insect-like thing. But then they add the click, those real sharp clicks to it, and it's totally just creepy alien-sounding, bug-like sounding appropriately. I love it. I love it. And I love that they don't bother to translate him, because you can pretty much figure out what he's saying. And Texas Jr. will just say it back anyway, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say, Texas Jr. would often repeat whatever Pod was saying. Be like, yes, my lord, we will fire on the blah, blah, blah.
And his number there, TX 21?
Yeah.
It sounds like the model number of a Radio Shack calculator. So, the Radio Shack TX-21.
Oh, I had TI-83 calculators in school.
Yes, because with them it was TI for Texas Instruments. But, yeah, maybe they went to Space Radio Shack and picked him up.
Oh, I see, like, Poggle going through, like, Space Radio Shack with Dooku, and he's like, I want that one! And Dooku's like, no, that's too expensive.
you can't have the TX-50. You gotta get one of the lower models.
But the TX-50 is made with chrome!
No, sorry.
Oh, but he has hubcaps!
Nope, he definitely didn't get the grenade-resistant one. He should have. Should have spent the extra money.
God, I have so many notes. Okay, so, I love the color difference between the outside battle versus the catacombs, and you go from these, like, bright reds to, like, really dark blues and grays. I love just, like, that difference between the two color schemes.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of nice foreshadowing for next week's episode, too.
Yes, yes.
And I love that they're catacombs. It's not even where they keep their dead. Or is it, compared to next week's episode? That's all I had for that.
For notes?
For that part. I wasn't sure if you were going to answer.
I was going to say, you got a lot more notes than that.
Yeah, so I wasn't sure if you were going to answer me. Anyway, I love the difference between the two Padawans. Barriss is by the books, while Ahsoka's strength is improvisation. They're really great foils to each other, and I'll get into more of that, of, like, why that's such a good thing in Act 3, but I do love seeing the difference between the two Padawans.
Yeah, and I almost thought there was going to be a competition between the two of them, or a tension between the two of them, but they end up getting along pretty good.
I'm so glad there wasn't, because so often in media,
right,
they'll pit two females against each other, and a lot most times they'll pit two females against each other over a boy, which is dumb. And so, like, I'm really glad that they stayed away from that. And it wasn't, like, Ahsoka going, like, oh, this Padawan's better than me, and blah, blah, blah. And she was like, no, man, you lead the mission.
Yeah, no, we kind of work well as a team, yeah.
Yeah, like, Ahsoka was just like, cool, you lead the way, and if you need my help, I'm here to help you, man. So I love that they didn't pit the two women against each other, because that's such an overused trope in media, and I really hate it. They hit the trust issue a lot in this, in Clone Wars episodes. Back in Senate Spy, Padme needed Anakin to trust her, and now Anakin needs to trust Ahsoka. Barriss also needs Ahsoka to trust her, too. Anakin and Ahsoka really are master and Padawan because they both have trust issues.
And Anakin's trust issue also might be masking his attachment issue, too.
Yes. Know?
So there's a little bit of Anakin's attachment issue in this episode, too, or a lot, yeah. Actually, but yeah.
I really got into that. I talked some more about that in Act 3, but yeah, definitely. I think that's a big thing. Okay, we need to talk about our brave ladies for a second. Ahsoka is 14, and we know that Barriss is a bit older than most Padawans, so I would put, like we said, put her about 16, 17.
Mm-hmm.
And here are two very young women willing to lay down their lives to save thousands of people. And they know that they're not coming out of it. Like, what an massively, like, brave thing to do. Like, that's just such a gorgeous scene. But it's also, like, so sad that this, like, 14 and probably 16-year-old are in this war setting. They're like, okay, well, time to die.
And they've seen clones do it a lot, too, so that, you know.
This show is so much deeper than people give it credit for. They're teenagers. Teenagers shouldn't have to do that. They should be, like, outside playing Pokemon Go.
All those clones are a lot younger than them.
I know. They should all just play Pokemon Go. Just be like, hey, Geonosians, we have to pause this battle. There's a Pikachu over there. Let's go.
That would mess up the rest of the seasons of Clone Wars, though, a little bit. I'd slow them down a little bit.
Well, then the Geonosians would be like, it's okay, you can go get that Pikachu. We're only trying to collect Bug-type Pokemon. Oh, wait, we are Bug-type Pokemon. I was making a terrible joke anyway. and my final note is I really got to talk a second about my Rex Soka ship. Uh-huh. You know, it's me. I have to talk about Rex. I'm really glad they had that very brief moment of Rex seeing the factory go down and he knows that Ahsoka's inside. Because since the movie, like day one, episode one, Rex has always been protective of Ahsoka. He told her to hold on to ships, like when they were crashing. In Jedi Crash, after Anakin jumps off to go after Sakura, Aayla Sakura, Rex was like, hey, kid. And she was like, I know, hold on, I got this. And they fought Grievous together. And he supported her command when Yularen was doubting her. And, like, they always have each other's back. And now, like, in that one tiny little moment, he's not there to protect her. And you just know that's got to be killing him on the inside because my shipper heart died. And he knows that she's inside and he's not there to save her. And he knows that she's probably going to die. And oh my God, I'm just so glad that they included that like very brief second of him just like leaning out towards the thing, just like knowing it's coming down. I wish we got to see his face in that moment. I wish he didn't have his helmet on because I bet I can just imagine his face is just sheer horror underneath his helmet. I love them.
Feelings.
But yeah, God, I'm just so glad that they just put that in there. Oh, shut up, Chris. I hear you laughing at me. You are laughing at me.
I am.
Shut up. It's so good. Rex Soka forever. Ahsoka Lives Day is a few days away, everybody, but by the time this comes out, it's already going to be past, so... Happy Ahsoka Lives Day. She lived through this and a lot. All right, I didn't have anything else for Act 2.
I'm ready to move on.
All right, so Act 3. The factory is destroyed. Anakin is freaking out. Luminara kneels at the last of her Padawan, seeing that there's not enough time to save them. The girls are drifting away. That's not good enough for Anakin. Rex arrives with the evacuation ships and tanks to start moving the debris. Luminara tells Anakin he misjudges her. She cares for Barriss, but if the Force says it's their time, then they need to let the girls go. If Barriss has died, Luminara will mourn, but celebrate her memory as well. Anakin refuses this answer. Buried underground, Ahsoka and Barriss survive the blast inside the super tank. Ahsoka takes a power cell, saying that they will run out of air before they starve. They need to act fast. She turns their communicator into a small pulse to signal for help by tapping a wire to it. Anakin picks up the pulse and they head over. Barriss and Ahsoka take each other's hands. Oh god, they take each other's hands in a moment of comfort as their air supply starts to diminish. As Anakin and Luminara uses the Force to lift the wreckage off the super tank, they move it away to find the Padawans crawling out. And Anakin pulls a, I told you so, but Luminara says, you know, man, I didn't give up on them either, but when the time comes, I'm ready to let Barriss go. Will you be ready to let go of Ahsoka? Anakin doesn't answer, and he pulls Ahsoka out. Luminara congratulates Ahsoka and tells her that Anakin never gave up on her and trusted her to find a way out, because trust is the theme of this episode. The end.
I get it. Trust. I get
trust,
it.
Trust. We got it. But even then, there wasn't much trust outside the fight.
All right. These Jedi always pull this shit.
All right.
She's got a point by saying, oh, you know, your attachment issue or whatever. But when it comes right down to it, when it was, if Anakin wasn't there and it was her and some just other Jedi who was of the same mind as her going along with her, they probably wouldn't have gotten him out of there alive.
Yeah, they would have totally left.
Because she was just like, oh, you know, does a little bow. And then she's like, I could feel them slipping away. Then when you cut to them in there, they're not injured, really. They're running out of air, but they're like... they're not slipping. They aren't dying. They're just like, all right, we got to wait for somebody to come get us or our air to run out, you know? And they're sort of joking with each other. And Ahsoka passes out, you know, once, or starts passing out with lack of oxygen at a certain point. But, you know, she was just giving up. She was just kind of giving up. And she was just sort of like, ah, yeah, it can't be, you know? And I think that's a little bit of the Jedi arrogance, too. And the thing about Anakin is, yeah, he was right, and he got them both out alive in Jedi philosophy and stuff. I guess maybe that doesn't mean anything because it's like sort of like the means justify the ends type of thing, which was what's one of the things that they were trying to, you know, pull Anakin away from being like. So you had all that wrapped up in there, but it's just the Jedi are hypocrites when they're right at the same time they're being like massive hypocrites to Anakin, and I like how that's all sort of being presented in here, and it's very lightly, but that's the stuff that built up over the years with Anakin of dealing with these goddamn Jedi. Mm-hmm. You know, they can't, you know, at the end, they're always just like, oh, geez, sorry about that apprentice and stuff. And it's like, you know, and all that time that they're just sort of kneeling and writing him off, they could have been digging him out, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, once you try to dig him out and you don't get him out, and it's like, okay, yeah, you know, we must not be attached to things. But you know what? The Jedi need Jedi.
Yeah.
So, well, isn't there some sort of Jedi oath to, like, not, you know, not leave a Jedi behind or something, you know? Well, maybe not, you know.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, you want to try to save the Jedi. Then if you don't, okay, you can, you know, how you react after that can be, you know, the test of how much attachment you have. But yeah, they start writing it off before the people are even detached. You know, you should really start detaching from them.
I mean, look at when N'Jar dies in Lara Grievous, Kit Fisto was just like, oh, no.
Yeah,
like,
well.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, but she's no N'Jar, you know. I can totally see that with N'Jar. I'd be sort of like, geez, that's a bummer.
And there's also not that wiggle room. Like, Kit Fisto saw N'Jar die. He was like, oh, he's dead. There's no chance of saving him. So that I could kind of see, because Kit Fisto was like, okay, I got to get out of here now.
Right.
At least with, like, with Luminara, it's like, no, she's still alive down there.
And they just won. They just won. They got everything they need, all that, so they can start digging them out, you know? At least you want the bodies to bury, right?
Yeah, or at least the lightsabers to keep, because that's a thing. They keep lightsabers.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, yeah, the Jedi are really quick to, like, write stuff off and then scold somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a point, because Anakin is letting his emotions master him, but at the same time, he's got a good maybe not a good reason for it, but there is a good reason for it, you know.
Yeah, I actually do want to talk about this a little bit. I had a lot of points about Luminara and this, and it's in the same argument, but I also had some questions for you that I wanted to ask as well. Because let's talk about the Jedi dealing with their possible deaths. Anakin is being very Anakin, since we know that attachment is weakness. And I found Luminara acting both accordingly. Like, we know that Jedi can care, but they also don't have attachments. And I like that they took a moment saying that she would mourn Barriss, you know? Because she does care for this young girl, just the way I'm sure, like, Obi-Wan cares for Anakin, or Anakin clearly cares for Ahsoka. But she's ready to let Barriss go when the time comes. It's a very Jedi thing to do, which made me want to pose a question for Rebels with Kanan and Ezra. Because in the season one finale, when Ezra fell off the bridge, Kanan could then fight the Inquisitor without having to worry about Ezra. And I don't think he really had the attachment there to worry about. But now Ezra and Kanan are these new kind of Jedi's in this new world. And we also know that a few years has passed by the end of season two. So the question I wanted to pose is, do you think Kanan would agree with the lack of attachment makes a Jedi stronger now that he's been with Ezra for so long? Or does the attachment to Ezra make them stronger together as a duo?
Oh, it's hard to say. Well, that definitely makes them better as a duo. But you can also tell it might be fostering a little bit of Anakin Obi-Wan syndrome at the same time. You know, because of his protectiveness of Ezra. At the same time, it's a very justified protectiveness from him.
Because that was my other question. Like, do you think that Kanan is extra protective of Ezra because there are now so few Jedi in the galaxy? For all we know, outside of Ahsoka, and we know Obi-Wan's out there, we don't know if there's any on Yoda. So we know of five Jedi.
Yeah, and he's a survivor of the killing. So he's, you know, that would make, you know, it's like being a Holocaust survivor. It would make you a little bit touchy about that subject. It might make you a little overprotective, you know, to know that like, you know, your entire kind was believed to be wiped out. And if anybody finds out that you're one, they're going to, you know, there's a running price on your head, you know? So yeah, it would definitely do that.
Do you think that, because of course we haven't seen season three of Rebels yet, do you think that they're going to make it okay to where attachment is an okay thing? Like, Kanan and Ezra might get to a point where they're like, oh, this attachment thing isn't bad.
They probably will. I mean, they're building, it's such a factor built into it. I don't know which direction it is. Disney, they might go in a they might try to have it a little bit both ways. You know what I mean? Star Wars does that in general anyway, a little bit. They sort of have it both ways, which works out, I think, better in, you know, this whole in prequel era and maybe not as so much in the Rebels era. Because we're getting into that sort of Luke Skywalker time period where it's like sort of more the organic, free-flowing, improvisational Jedi who's more in tune with the Force than the mechanics of it, you know?
That's how I see Kanan and Ezra, though. Like, they're both very... Like, Kanan lived for years without whipping out his lightsaber because he had to learn how to use a blaster and stuff like that. Like, I see him... Well, you know, they call him the Cowboy Jedi. Like, he had to make his own rules because he had no council or Jedi masters or knights to guide him. So I see that he's already there.
He might not have... Well, I'm sure he was lectured a little bit on attachment by his master and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But not so much since he never really had a Padawan or anything. I mean, he really was just a kid, you know, when he started, too, so...
Yeah, I mean...
And he can't help but look at Ezra and see himself, too, on top of that.
The reason I'm asking this question so much about Rebels is at the end of the season one finale in Twilight of the Apprentice, we see that Ezra you know, Darth Maul was tempting him, like, you know, if you don't do this, do it this way, you're going to lose your friends. Like, if you didn't kill that Inquisitor, that could be your friends next time.
Right, right.
And he was playing with that attachment, and we see that Ezra opens the Sith holocron, which you can only open with the dark side of the Force. So I'm wondering if attachment is going to become an issue with Ezra, but maybe not so much with Kanan. But since Kanan is so protective of Ezra, with there being so few Jedi in the galaxy, I'm wondering if that's going to be an issue for Kanan as well.
Yeah, well, you know, it depends on what direction they decide to go. If something ever happens to Kanan, that could really, you know, I mean, they are sort of, you know, hinting at Ezra, you know, will they do, like, the sort of thing where they hint that Ezra's tilting towards the dark side, because then we could see him, you know, 30 years later in the new movies, and now he's in the dark side, and it's plausible because you saw that in him as a kid. Or will they have him, you know, at some point go over to the dark side, you know?
Yeah,
they could do it. They could have Ezra go dark 3 seasons down the line, go off to join the Empire or whatever, and
I still think Ezra is a Knight of Ren. Like, that's still my theory. I think Ezra will become a Knight of Ren. Like, that is my Rebels theory.
You know, they could end a season with him walking off with Darth Vader at some point.
Mm-hmm. I guess, too, you could also argue that you see that the Inquisitors are Force users, but they don't have attachments either. Like, they are pretty much competing for the role of being the next highest Inquisitor.
Yeah, that's sort of Sith. You know, Sith might have an attachment to, like, their lightsaber or something, you know, or their ship.
I don't know, though. Have you ever read this, like, the Sith code, man? It's always, like, you know, love equals passion. Passion is a good thing. Passion equals desire. Desire makes you protective. Desire...
Maybe they have a girlfriend or something, but as far as other Sith go, I would imagine it would all be pure, even with a master, would it still be on some, you know, there would be a level of competition.
Yeah, so, I don't know.
As a Sith, you want all that power, you know?
Yeah, this episode just got me thinking a lot about Rebels. All right, so back to Weapons Factory. Back in Act 2, I talked about how the Padawan's differences and stuff like that and how it made them stronger. And it's their differences is what makes them successful in their mission. Because Barriss gets them to the reactor, but she freezes, like, when things don't go according to plan. But it's Ahsoka's improvisation skills that allowed them to blow up the factory and save their lives.
That's for sure. Well, that's why they make a great team.
Yeah, so that's why I really liked two very different ladies approaching a situation together, and they're able to get it done, and I loved it. And my last big note, and then I have a little one. I want to see more stories with Jedi Masters and Padawans outside of our normal group, because we see a lot of Anakin and Obi-Wan's journey. We see Anakin, Ahsoka, Ezra, and Kanan, but I want to see how other Masters and Padawans get along. Like, we know that Nadar became a troubled and reckless Jedi Knight when Kit Fisto had to leave his training to go fight in the war. And then, like, Luminar and Barriss totally work in sync together. I would have loved to see Windu and Depa Bialba, who is Kanan's master, train, and, like, what knowledge Windu gave to Depa to make her such a strong master to Kanan. And, you know, Aayla Secura was chose to leave her master Quinlan Vos because they were getting too attached. She saw him like a father, and she realized that she couldn't have that attachment, and she had to leave Quinlan Vos. And she also had a romantic relationship with Kit Fisto in the extended universe. So I just really want to see some of these, like, other Masters Jedi and Padawan stories that we don't get to see, like, outside of our main group. Because I just want to know, like, you know, is everybody... How do other people train? How do other people get through this? How do other people take care of business? And whether or not they go through the same struggles or not, like... We know Ventress was very close to her master, and when he died, it's what drove her to the dark side.
It's almost like a cop show. They're almost like partners in cop shows.
Yeah.
Cagney and Lacey and John and Ponch and all that.
Yeah, I mean, I would just love to see that. Like, I just want more. I want more Star Wars. And then my final note is just a heads up for next week. Whenever you listeners watch it, pay attention to things that Barriss says and how she acts. I don't want to spoil future seasons for Chris, but it's the beginning of some major foreshadowing for future seasons.
Do you think they were foreshadowing it, or they just went back and used this for other seasons? Do you think they had it planned out that much?
I think so. I really do. A lot of shows...
I wouldn't be surprised with this show.
You know, some shows I don't think so much. I always use the example of Once Upon a Time. Like, I know since season one, they wanted to bring in Captain Hook. They just couldn't buy the rights to Captain Hook until season two. So I knew that they've always wanted to have Captain Hook, but I don't think they ever intended for him and Emma to get together until they saw that Jen and Colin had really great chemistry on screen.
Mm-hmm.
So I think some shows don't plan ahead that far, but I feel like with Star Wars, like especially a lot of the things that Barriss says next week, not next week, I'm sorry. No, it's not next week.
Well, this is more like a show like Once Upon a Time has live action actors. This is all vocal actors and stuff. So there's not as much of the like, oh, do these guys have chemistry together? They might not even be in the room together at some points.
I just realized it's not next week, so this note's not valid. Okay, so not this next week. The week after, when we do Brain Invaders.
Brain Invaders!
Yeah, that's the episode you need to pay attention to everything that Barriss and Ahsoka say. Barriss. Because it's going to be some major foreshadowing for, like, season 5 stuff.
Excellent.
So, pay attention, Chris. It's very important.
I will.
I'd like to hear your theories about what you think the foreshadowing is, but I won't confirm or deny it because I don't want to spoil it for you.
I'm on it.
So, that's all I had for the episode. Did you have anything else?
No. I like it.
All right. So, what did you think about the episode as a whole, Chris?
It's one of those standard... It's a 7 out of 10. It's a standard... just very good episode of Clone Wars, and it's continuing. It might have been higher, but it's just sort of like continuing on with what they set up in the first two episodes of this. And or was it just one episode before this?
Two.
It was two. Yeah, and they've set up that, you know, that gritty war action feel to it. But, yeah, good solid 7 out of 10. Just a good standard episode of Clone Wars.
Well, mine was a 16 out of 20, which is an 8. I love this episode. It's one of my personal favorites. The whole thing is a great battle, like one long battle. Kevin Kiner just absolutely rocks the music. And I love the friendship forming between Barriss and Ahsoka. Like, these are two very young, brave ladies willing to sacrifice everything to save the lives of thousands. This is also the tale of two Jedi masters. Luminara is what an ideal Jedi should be like, and Anakin continues to struggle with his attachment, showing that Clone Wars is so good at portraying his downslide into Vader. Like, but the only thing is I could always use more Rex and Ahsoka moments.
Of
always.
Course. Of
always.
Course.
So, 16 out of 20. So, yeah. Well, I pulled some comments from the Two True Freaks Facebook page. If you want to leave us reviews or feedback, there are two ways to do it. The very first way is to review us on iTunes, which we would love to get more of. It helps people find the show, even if you just rate us. Just give us a rating, because it helps people find the show, and we want to know what you guys think of us. And we will, of course, always read your reviews on the show. And the other way to give us feedback is we have a Facebook page. It's at the Two True Freaks Facebook page. And if you find the episode on there, you can leave us a comment and we'll read your comment on the show like we're about to do right now.
And I'll read it because, god damn it, you've been doing a lot of reading tonight, Hope.
Thank you.
So I got this one.
Okay.
All right. So this is from our buddy Aaron Henley.
Hey, Aaron.
And this is from our season one roundup episode thread that we had up there. Just wanted to thank you guys for a great recap. You're welcome.
Very welcome.
Almost spit out my drink when I heard Hope's Rexvolution recap. It's funny that you say that. I was almost going to warn in the show notes not to drink milk during that part.
I honestly, like, I remember doing it, but I could in no way remember what I said. So as I was listening to it, I just had my hands over my face like, oh my god, what the hell am I saying right now? And don't worry, Aaron, Chris and I already talked about it. That will probably have to be a thing every season for me to talk about Rex's revolution.
Yeah, we'll get some Rex-volution action going every season. All right, so back to Aaron Henley says, though I can't believe you forgot Rex's waddling when he carried Goldie.
I know.
I also love the discussion on fangirls and really could tell just how much Ahsoka meant to you, and I know, well, she still means. But mm-hmm. He said meant. It's present tense meant. Man, she still means something to her.
Always.
And there's still a lot of, well, geeky stuff is a boy's thing, fossils out there, but I really appreciated a logical, heartfelt discussion on a character who is now as integral to Star Wars as anyone else. Looking forward to season 2. And now we're almost halfway through it.
Yeah. I mean, I just FYI, Aaron left us another comment about this roundup, and he called out you listeners. But that will be in the feedback for next week, because, yeah.
Might as well spread it out.
Yeah, I wanted to, because I was just like, yay, we only put up one episode when we were going to record two, so let me split this up. But yeah, so Aaron calls out you listeners next week, so make sure you listen next week to hear it. But seriously, Aaron, like, thank you for always, like, giving us things. Like, I'm glad you really enjoyed that conversation, because Ahsoka does mean a lot to me, and I sometimes it is hard being a geeky girl in a what feels like a boys' world, even though, like, pretty much every single one of my girlfriends are all nerds, in one way or another. the only person, like, people I know that are, like, my lady friends that are not nerds are, like, my sisters. I'm glad that discussion meant something to you. That makes me feel good.
And feeling good is what it's all about.
You know what feels good also, Chris?
What's that?
Giving people knowledge of where to find us.
Oh, it does. It feels great. I'm going to do it right now. You can find me at twotruefreaks.com, which is our headquarters for the Two True Freaks podcast network, with 10 billion podcasts. Not only can you find new podcasts, but you can find a whole library of old podcasts. We probably have about 31 different podcasts that are running continuously right now on every nerdy topic. So come in and check us out. While you're there, you might want to shop on our Amazon link. You'll hear more about that in the credits coming out of here. But yeah, and you can find us on Facebook. Just look for twotruefreaks.com.
Yes, and you can find me at JGuysAndJedi. I run our Twitter accounts. And you can also find me at HopeMolex at Twitter. And I also work for What the Fangirl, and I actually recapped this episode in my What the Fangirl Season 2 recap. Is one of my favorites. So, yes, I talk about all sorts of things over on What the Fangirl. Come check us out over there. Let me know what you think. And all that other good stuff. Yeah, I feel awkward. That was awkward. Sorry. I'm an awkward Geonosian.
Well, we'll see you next week when it gets horrifying.
Oh, no, I'm so excited.
Horror.
You know that, you know Frankenclone?
Yes.
He's going to be in like 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, I like Frankenclone too.
He's going to be like,
Frankenclone yeah. 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Oh, man, we're almost done with Geonosians. Oh, I really like this battle arc because... After the Mandalorian, I'm not a big fan of the second half of this season. It's just kind of mediocre compared to the bang that is like Cad Bane, and then the second battle of Geonosians, and then we go to Mandalore and we meet Satine, and then it's just like, oh hey, Ahsoka lost her lightsaber.
It could have been one episode. All they needed was that giant can of space raid, and it would have been all over.
Yeah, so we're starting to move out of, until we get to Mandalore, we're moving out of my favorite arc. But I still have a few shining moments. I think, like, Bounty Hunters is the season, and little tiny Boba Fett with tiny, tiny clones.
You know
tiny
what they,
clone babies.
You know what they needed to do? They needed to hang those sticky bug strips from the bottom of their battle cruisers and just go flying over Geonosis and sticking all the bugs onto it.
Oh.
Fly them into a cliff. The end. If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at twotruefreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop,
Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
We were finally invited aboard one of these spacecraft, which landed near Ann Arbor, Michigan on October the 24th of 1954. This is a drawing of the craft. As I was leaving the craft, the commander, Soltek, said, "Soon others of your people will be able to have an experience similar to this."